It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name's Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic, and as always, Mike Coffey from NDNation.com. Coffey, I'm going to start with you because you've been spot on all year. Obviously, this is the biggest game of the year. Probably, not to say the USC won't be a task for us. I think they will be. It always is. But certainly, I think if anybody's looking at the last two games, this is the one that's got you a little bit nervous. But I wanted to start with you because you've been nailing it. What's it going to be?
Well, I guess we're skipping ahead to the end so people can shut the show off if they're in a hurry. I am not convinced that Syracuse is a top 12 team. They very well may prove me wrong, but if you look at what they've been doing all year, I mean, they've played a slate full of mostly nobodies, and when they played Clemson, Clemson had their quarterback issues, and I believe the guy they've got starting out got hurt, and there were all kinds of things that went crazy in that game. I am going to say Notre Dame is going to win 35.
Ed, are you in agreement with that, or where do you stand?
I mean, I think it's really going to be one of those deals where we're going to know sort of pretty quickly if our defense is back on its heels or if our defense can run with these guys. I mean, I fully expect them to be able to, but it's probably the best kind of top-to-bottom offensive football team we've played all year, just in terms of quarterback execution and quality of skill position players. I'm going to go with I think Notre Dame's going to beat Syracuse by a wider margin than Clemson beat Syracuse, in the same way that Notre Dame beat Northwestern by a wider margin than Michigan beat Northwestern. And I'm going to say, because everybody's talking about helmets and uniforms, that Syracuse, which has a black orange S on their helmet Saturday, Notre Dame will beat them by the same score that they beat the last block S that was a red S from Stanford. And Mike Coffey tells me that score was 38-17. So I hate to be so close to everybody else, to the conventional wisdom, but at least I have a silly and very broadly researched reason for picking my score.
I'm so serious.
Exactly. As opposed to you guys who just pull it out of the air.
Right. Yeah, I think my brother called me last night from New York. He's there at the game with all his buddies. And I was 35-24 Notre Dame. But I think, Ed, you alluded to it. The whole entire game is going to come down to, do we get a rush with our front four? Because I think that if we're able to rush four guys and put pressure on them, that's going to be a bad sign for Syracuse. If we don't, then, you know, I don't know. That's going to be not good for us. Just as you said, I think this is going to be the best offensive team we've faced up to this point. They got some serious talent at the wide receiver position. And, you know, that's the thing that's scary is, you know, do they get out a couple scores and all of a sudden we're on our heels? But I think this is one of those over-under games. If we hold them to under 24 points, I just can't see how we don't beat them. I mean, it just is not going to happen. If they get over 24 points, then I think anything can happen. And, you know, we're going to be seeing some issues. But I do think
is a team Notre Dame overall that's made really good halftime adjustments on defense. If you recall, you know, especially the first half of the season, they would look a little shaky at times in the first half and really play some shutdown third quarters. So, you know, maybe the game will sort of follow that pattern where, you know, it's 17-14 at halftime or 17-all or 20-14, we're losing even. And then sort of the defense gets its head right and kind of solves a couple things. And, you know, we kind of win the second half, something like 21-3 or 17-7 or something like that, and win the football game. So that's sort of been the pattern this year with games like this. It's, you know, it's kind of easy. You can kind of clump Syracuse in with a lot of opponents just in terms of sort of their, you know, how they kind of, they're better than Pitt. They're better than Stanford. They're better than Northwestern, I think. They're probably better than, they're definitely better than Florida State. They're better than, I'm not sure if they're better than Michigan, because I don't think their defense is that quality. But I think, you know, I think this might be a case where the conventional wisdom is probably pretty close, unless it's one of those wacky games. We got to remember, Notre Dame hasn't really had a wacky game this year. I mean, it had a game with a block punt, but it hasn't had a game where it's had, you know, where it's played fumbleitis or, you know, last weekend was fairly wacky with tip balls, you know, for interceptions that, you know, a couple bad interceptions that sort of Wimbush threw. But there really hasn't been, you know, sort of a ridiculous penalty that came close to affecting the outcome, or a gadget play that sort of changed the momentum, or, you know, there hasn't really been a wacky game. And so when you're in a place like Yankee Stadium and different uniforms and all that kind of stuff, I remember going to Fenway Park a few years ago. That was just an ugly-ass football game. The Notre Dame ended up squeaking past BC, but that did them no favors, you know, in November playing a game like that. It just really seemed to sort of be a mess of a game. So if you could have that, and then you're kind of talking about game pressure in the fourth quarter, and you'll see what happens. Even then, I think Notre Dame wins because it's got a good kicker, and it's Ian Book has demonstrated he's pretty cool under pressure. So anyways, that's kind of how I see things.
You know, it's really kind of funny. If you had told me at the beginning of this season, hey, you know, in November, we're going to be really lucky Syracuse is on the schedule because Florida State's having a down year and Southern Cal's having a down year, but we've got a ranked Syracuse team to make our November look good. That would have been just I would have bet folding money that you were wrong. And now we have, thank goodness we have this team to actually make the schedule look good. I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk about the game being in New York City and all the travel and stuff like that. And I've kind of come around to, I can't remember which one of you had said it in an earlier show. You know, it's not like the old days when you're getting on a train for 25 hours or whatever. These are 3-4 hour flights, and you know, it's not optimal to be bouncing around on the coast and stuff like that. But I think we're gonna have to, you know, just do what we can do and kind of take it from there.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Ed, do you think just out of curiosity, the big discussion has been, all right, does Notre Dame get in undefeated? Of course they do. But what happens if they have a loss? So, you know, my thought is, no, we stand no chance of getting in. But there are a couple scenarios where, you know, it's actually possible with a loss to Syracuse that we do get in. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, if you had to put a percentage on it, what's the chance that we actually get in with the loss?
Yeah, I mean, I've maintained from the beginning that we're not in with a loss for several reasons. You know, it's better to lose early than to lose late. We'll be losing late. Just general conference bias, and I don't think that this committee appears to be showing signs of being any different in terms of the fact that it's even talking about Michigan and Notre Dame and where they place relative to each other is kind of ridiculous to me. So, and I it's really interesting. I mean, article after article, you know, the 4-touchdown loss to Alabama in 2012 still hangs over all these conversations about Notre Dame being in the playoff and Notre Dame being in the Final Four. I mean, it's kind of like interesting to me that here's this team that went undefeated that year, that made it to the national championship game, that, yes, looked outclassed against Alabama, but also had a lot of stuff going on in the background that we found out later in terms of Manti and Brian Kelly, and, you know, and it did not have a great quarterback. You know, it's just, you know, there's all that stuff built up in sort of Notre Dame's baggage. So I think if they lose tomorrow, or if they win tomorrow and lose to USC, they will be the odd man out. There's no question in my mind. And you know, you could have an argument about whether that's right or just or whatever. People will really gripe if Notre Dame and Michigan each have one loss and Michigan gets in. You know, for the reasons that I just sort of listed, I don't think we got a shot at all if we lose.
No, I think you're right, and I think it would come down to there being no other one-loss teams. I mean, that would be like the only way we get in. I don't know if you feel differently, Coffey, but you know, just the way that the committee has come up with the reasoning behind how they've ranked everybody at this point, I can't see Notre Dame getting in over anybody. I even think that they're trying to set up LSU as a two-loss team to possibly jump us if we're a one-loss at that point.
And that very well may be the reality of the situation, which really is stupid, because I agree with that it's easier to it's better to lose early than lose late, but it seems like Alabama is the only team that or maybe even SEC teams in general to which that doesn't apply, where for SEC teams, well, we'll consider the entire body of work. Well, that's ridiculous. I think there really needs to be a set criteria that says that this is how we're going to determine who gets in. Now, I can think of more than a couple scenarios where a lot of teams have two. I mean, Ohio State can beat Michigan. Oklahoma State might. I'm sorry, Oklahoma may lose in their. In their title game, Alabama beats Georgia. Well, all of a sudden, Notre Dame at a one-loss team. I mean, if just about everyone else has two losses, it doesn't matter when they lost, because, and especially I think the win over Michigan still is going to help them. But I really think they need some kind of a criteria that they publicize that says here's how things go, because otherwise. And maybe even with that criteria, I honestly think we're heading towards an 8-team playoff, because let's say it's the Final Four end up this year ends up being Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and let's say just for fun, Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC title game. Well, now you have a one-loss Georgia, and then one other one-loss team. Chances are it probably would be Alabama because of the inequitable consideration that they get. But look at it this way. That gives you two SEC teams, an ACC team, and Notre Dame. You have no Big Ten, no Big 12, no Pac-10. And how long is it going to be before all the conferences are saying, hey, wait a second here. We're getting four teams isn't enough. We need an 8-team playoff where all the Power 5 teams get an automatic bid, and then there are three at-larges. And I really think, based on the way the last couple of picks have gone and the way this one very well may go, I think we're heading there sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I do think this is going to be the year that starts this whole conversation of the 18 playoff, because I mean, theoretically, if you look at this, unless Bama, Clemson, Notre Dame win out, and then Michigan wins the Big Ten, the committee is safe and sound. It's probably yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's unlikely that's going to happen anyway.
if you look at it, if you're a Georgia fan or you're an Oklahoma fan, are you looking at Michigan and saying, wait a second, why are they getting consideration over us? They already lost to one of the teams, Oklahoma especially. They're probably saying, hey, they played Notre Dame. They lost. That was their play-in game. That was their chance to show that they belonged. I mean, why is their one loss better than our one loss? And why aren't we getting more consideration? That sort of thing.
Well, probably because they give up 40 points a game on
defense.
Well, I think the point I'm trying to make is that if the whole thing gets thrown into chaos if Notre Dame loses. Or,
yeah, I hate this stuff. Can we talk more about tomorrow's game? I hate this stuff.
Yeah, well, all right, we could.
We're jinxing it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just a little bit nervous. I don't want anyone to talk too much about the game. But, I think you're right. I just think at this time of the year, everybody's focusing on that. And, you know, it is.
Are there
what it
any
is,
other but, meaningful games tomorrow, you know, to that effect?
Think there's any good games. No, there's nothing.
None.
There's literally nothing on the schedule. It's us, and then that's it. We can't even watch anything at night to, you know, take our mind off the game. But
And you know,
if Notre Dame loses, I already have a built-in excuse because I'm a Red Sox fan and the Yankees suck, and anything about the Yankees sucks. So that's going to be the reason that Notre Dame loses if they lose, is that godforsaken stadium
Well, they got 6 inches of snow this morning.
Did they really?
I don't know. I heard it was snowing last night, like sleet.
Oh,
so,
good.
But it is warming up to 48 today. So, I mean, it's going to melt. Not that big of a deal.
I wonder if they cover the field or if they, I don't know. I'm sure Aaron Judge probably sort of left some divots or something out by the 10-yard line that Chris Finke will slip on his way in for a game-winning touchdown or something. There'll be something that'll happen.
You better knock on something, dude.
It should be a great crowd. And you know, if that's going to be the weather, and you know, Syracuse has a lot of local fans. Listen, this is their Super Bowl. They've been in the wilderness for a long time. They haven't sniffed a bowl game for a while. Dino Babers has done a terrific job. So it's going to be off the hook. There's going to be some hitting going on, and that's why I think Notre Dame's front seven is just so important. If they can set a tone and give Clemson sort of the idea right off the bat that this is not something that they've encountered before, or at least not since Clemson, then that'll be, I think, a real good sign. And we're also going to have to watch Ian Book closely, right? Like, how well does he move? How well does he throw? His first couple throws, I imagine Chip Long will try and get him off to a start with those, you know, short and sort of intermediate slants, and just kind of get him in a groove. You know, Syracuse has an underrated and sort of underloved front four themselves. They've got some good guys up there. So can we, I think, like in a lot of games this year, we're going to use the pass to set up the run in the first quarter and kind of see where that goes.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It is going to be interesting, especially with Book coming off the injury. You know, how much pressure does he put on himself to, hey, man, you know, that was just, I was hurt. I deserve this spot. I'm here. Does he overdo it? Does he, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But I think you're right. Chip Long will probably just want to get him right into the situation right away, do a couple quick passes, get some confidence underneath you, and then we're right back to where we were, which is, you know, 70%+ completion rate. That's going to beat Syracuse if we don't turn the ball over.
No, there's just no way. Yeah, true.
I
don't think that's necessarily a concern. I mean, as happy as I was that not only did Wimbush get the opportunity, but he played well and led the team to a resounding win, which is certainly great. I think the beginning of the second half especially, we kind of saw why Ian Book is now the starting quarterback. I mean, the two interceptions and a little bit of sloppiness, and I don't think Book's going to feel that pressure because he knows why he's starting. He knows the circumstances that led to it, and I don't think anything happened at Florida State to create any kind of a quarterback controversy.
Oh, God,
so
no.
I think he's pretty set that he's the starter. So I don't think he's putting that kind of pressure on himself.
My concern is the
physical pressure. Where is Syracuse looking at him thinking, you know, we put a couple really good licks on this guy. Maybe we send him back to the bench. And, you know, that certainly is a concern. I mean, I have every confidence in the world in the training staff and their ability to protect him and stuff like that. But if he's got to wear a flak jacket or something like that, is that going to hamper his ability to pass only because he's wearing more gear to try to keep him to protect the ribs and stuff? And if he's encumbered physically that way, is that a factor?
Yeah. And for the record, I think Notre Dame could beat Syracuse with Brandon Wimbush playing quarterback tomorrow.
Oh, I agree. But, I agree with that as well.
Yeah.
If we don't turn the football over, I totally agree. I think we still beat him. No, you're right. But, you know, as we said, I think it comes down to the front seven, particularly the front four. If we're getting pressure with that, then Syracuse is going to be in trouble. I just – they're not going to put more than 24 points on the board, and that isn't going to beat Notre Dame. So,
I will say that Syracuse has, you know, one of those things that is always an issue, and they have a veteran sort of – KG, talented quarterback who's kind of seen it all, who plays with a lot of grit, who plays with abandon, you know, insert, you know, with Kevin Hogan in that, you know, class, and, you know, some other guys that we've encountered. And you can't ever count Syracuse out. I guarantee you this, Notre Dame cannot cannot let up like they have in some games this year, because, you know, even if it's a 2-3 score game in the third quarter, look out, because this guy is going to keep coming at you and coming at you and coming at you. So it's going to have to be 60 minutes of football. There's not going to be you're not going to see Syracuse kind of go quietly, and this game's not going to be over at halftime like Florida State like last Saturday. So
yeah, no, I think you're right.
You know, one thing that kind of makes me wonder, and I think we talked about this briefly on an earlier show. We are now at the mark of the season where the absolute most games we'll see for the rest of the year is four. If Notre Dame wins their last two games and they win their playoff games and make the national championship game, there's four games left. And we've got a number of freshmen who haven't played yet. And I know the conventional wisdom is that they haven't played by now, they're not going to. But I still think about guys like Braden Lindsey and guys who really were relatively highly touted at skill positions who just haven't had a chance to see the field yet. And I'm thinking to myself, geez, fresh legs like that and relatively talented kids who can now play the last four games and have no effect to their eligibility at all. I wonder if we're going to see some new names tomorrow, if only to if their offense goes as quickly as is advertised and they want to keep fresher legs on defense, maybe a couple guys who haven't played a couple plays here and there just to keep fresh bodies in there, maybe try to keep them in check, or to try to put more pressure on their defense, on their relatively untested defense. I think they're like 107th against the pass or get a few speedsters out there.
I'd be shocked if anybody who hasn't played yet plays tomorrow, and I'd be surprised if they're even on the travel on the plane out there. They're just not, you know, Bracey has played, he'll play. Griffith. You're not going to see Braden Lindsey. You're not going to see Lawrence Keys. You're not going to see any offensive guys play who haven't played yet this year. I just don't think that that's, besides the fact that it's maybe they take more guys because technically it's a Notre Dame home game, but I don't think those guys will go to California. And I think where you might see that, Mike, is if you might see if somebody takes a big jump between USC and the playoff game, if that's where they're going, or USC and the bowl game, especially if they're not in the playoff, that's where I think you might see some guys get a chance to show something, because they've got that month where they, you know, stand out in practice and workouts and stuff. But I'd be shocked if in these last two games we see a number on the field that we haven't seen before playing significant minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think. There's no doubt about it. But, I don't know. When it's all said and done, I think right now the coaching staff is like, all right, we got to win this football game. We got guys that have been there, done that. Let's do it with those guys, is my guess. But who knows? I mean, you know, this is the kind of weird stuff when we can sit here as fans and you know, project whatever we think, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes of practice. We don't know if guys are banged
up.
That's true. Never know. So, but I do think, you know, the interesting thing is, I do think this is where the scrutiny comes in on Brian Kelly. Because I, you know, if all of a sudden something slips up between Syracuse or USC, you're going to just look at the coaching staff first. I mean, unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And it's going to be like, okay, we had two games to get through. Why didn't we get through it? And you just naturally go to that.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that expectations have changed, right? So, you know, we're like, everybody's like, oh, 9-3, 10-2 would be great. But now it's, you know, it's Hard Rock Stadium or bust. And that's, like you said, that's just the way that it works. But these are two games that we'll be double-digit favorites in. So, like you said, Mike, if Notre Dame doesn't I hate using the word prevail, but if Notre Dame doesn't prevail in these last two games, then the staff will get some, you know, how were we prepared? But we're kind of closing the way we started, I think, barring a rash of turnovers or some kind of wackiness. I think they'll win.
Yeah, no. Well, if things play out, we should win the game. All three of us are predicting a win, so I'm going to go with that. And I think it's best that we end it with that. So let's hope that we're talking about how do we avoid a loss at USC to end the season, and otherwise we're in the playoffs. And that's all good for us as well as everybody else, I'm sure.
As long as we don't have to play Radford Saturday, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah. You know, I was trying hard, Ed, not to bring up basketball, but
sorry.
I guess if we lose, we're going to end up bringing it up, but I think it's best we don't bring it up right
now. Yeah, we'll save that for January. Let's just save that for January.
Yeah, exactly.
January 8th.
Yeah. All right, good deal. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.